This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Ah, there it is. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education Monday. Johnny, what's happening, my friend? How are you? Did you have a good weekend?
Oh, yeah, always, of course. You know, we're wrapping up the school year most places. Some schools even out for the summer already. But, you know, we're coming down to that smooth landing that we hope all classrooms and students get to have. You know, so it's exciting to start another week off here. It's a special night, Tim.
It is special. But you know what, Johnny? Busted Pencils is sponsored by the Minocqua Brewing Company, who sued the state of Wisconsin to end its parasitic voucher system that hurts public schools. Minocqua Brewing Company is making Wisconsin great again, one beer at a time. Check out MinocquaBrewingCompany.com to see where you can buy their progressive beer. And yes, great guest, Johnny. We've had shows where we've talked about the science of reading. She came in and talked to us before. I'm going to get a little deeper, though. Three queuing system. And this makes me ask the question, I wonder what Matt Damon's mom would say about the three queuing system. And there she is, Nancy Carlson Page. Welcome back to Busted Pencils, Dr. Nancy. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. Hi, Tim. Hi, Johnny.
Hey.
It's good to be here. So okay. You want me to answer that about the three queuing system?
Yeah. So in reading, we know the science of reading is now mandated, what'd you say, in 25 states required. And what I'm seeing now a lot on social media is a lot of people are saying, you know, we're not even allowed to use the three queuing system anymore. And I thought, what a great night for Dr. Nancy Carlson Page. What the heck is three queuing system? Because I know a lot of people are out there going like, what is it? It must be, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Okay. Just a little bit of context. Reading wars have gone on for 50, 100 years. They've cycled through. This cycle is bizarre because it's not coming from educators or researchers. It's coming from journalists and media people. And we're in a time, in case you guys haven't noticed, where people grab onto ideas, you could even say conspiracies, and promote them without digging deeper. And it's something happening to the whole society. It's the complex reasons why. But this is partly a function of that kind of milieu that we're in. So a lot of states have jumped on board. They've said the three queuing system is debunked. That isn't true. You can read the book, Fact-Checking the Science of Reading, and find out all the facts. The facts are in that book, Fact-Checking Science of Reading by Tierney and Pearson, and you can get all the accurate information. But the three queuing system means giving children a lot of information about how the print system works so they can figure out how to read. And I'll tell you a little more about what that means. But language is a complex, beautiful thing, right? And children learn it learn to talk without anybody teaching them. And reading, to some extent, needs to be taught, but it's also in the environment, and children do pick up a lot just by seeing stop signs and signs in grocery stores and so forth. But when it gets into schools, we want to try to help them learn in a more systematic way how to make sense of print. So you wouldn't just give them one little bit of information, which is phonics. You want to give them all the information we can possibly give, because their brains, nobody really understands how the brain does this, but it's taking all this information and trying to make sense of it in a very rapid way. And also, it's different for every child. That's why there's not a one-size-fits-all methodology, because kids learn, research has shown, reading instruction is successful some of the time and not all of the time in different settings. So a teacher has to be prepared with a big repertoire to understand how is any individual kid making sense of print? Because kids are going to do it differently. But the three cueing system actually means, and it comes out of psycholinguistic theory, and it's something that I taught to my graduate students for years, that yes, we understand the print system by understanding sounds and letters, also called the graphophonemic system. We also understand print by making sense of it. That is to say, if a child's reading a sentence that says IAA, and there's a three-letter word starting with a B, they're going to use their understanding of meaning to know, what could that be? I ate a what? It wouldn't be a bus, would it? Because you don't eat a bus. No, it would be, a bun. It's a bun. And they might actually say bun before they've even seen all the three letters, because maybe they don't even need them. But if they do need them, they see the N and they go, bun, okay. But they also, so meaning is something that's driving making sense of print, and we always want meaning to operate. It's called the semantic system in the three cueing thing. Semantics and meaning are basically the same thing. And then also there's an intuitive understanding of grammar, because kids understand grammar when they're talking. They know parts of speech without knowing the name of the noun or adjective. But that's why they wouldn't read the sentence as I ate a bright. Because a bright, maybe they saw the B, but they wouldn't say bright because that's an adjective, and they intuitively know that a noun would go there, even though they were never taught that. Does this make sense?
Yeah. So
okay, so all this information that kids already have about language, because having a strong oral language background is the biggest thing to help them learn to read, because they have this knowledge of speaking. They already know we talk to make sense. Why are we talking to each other? Because we're trying to make sense with each other. We're trying to speak meaningfully. You wouldn't ever take that away from a speaker. You don't ever want to take their voice away from them. And the same as they learn to read, they start to use what they know about language and bring it forward when they're trying to make sense of print. So they're bringing forward a knowledge of semantics or meaning, grammar, syntax, and also letters and sounds. They already know letters and sounds, but it's very helpful to teach them phonics, especially in the beginning, because they letters and sounds are most helpful when kids are first learning. So all these three systems, they're called the three cueing systems, they're all operating.
Right.
So this turned into some crazy controversy that doesn't even have any basis in anything.
Well, because I'm going to say that, so the critics, their big thing is, well, when you teach kids three cueing, Nancy, all you're doing is teaching them to guess, and that's just not teaching them reading.
Okay. This whole criticism came out of a podcast called Sold a Story by Emily Hanford, who's a reporter, not an educator. And she criticized, she went to some, I listened to it, I could barely stand it. Mm-hmm. And the people who wrote the book on fact-checking said it was mean-spirited, and that's kind, because it was horrible, full of false information, misleading, misconceptions, and distortions of what three-cueing even is. She didn't ever even understand it. But they set this up as kind of a false dichotomy. It's either you teach all the cueing systems or you teach phonics. And it wasn't even a real dichotomy in the first place. But the word guessing was something that one of the original psycholinguists, Ken Goodman, used the word guessing to mean that sometimes when you read, you think about when you read, if you're a good reader, a fluent reader, you are sometimes reading a word really fast and you don't even read it correctly, but you don't know till you go back and self-correct, right? Mm-hmm. You don't even know you read the wrong word if you're reading really fast. So he used the word guessing, and then it got distorted in this new political ideological framework to be what we were teaching kids, which we never were.
Because, when you talk about this, you've got three points to the three cueing system, and it sounds like a system approach to saying, You know, if you need some letter hints, you're going to use some letter and some phonemic skills. If you have some sense of what you're reading, you might draw on some knowledge about what it is you think you're reading.
Exactly.
And so you're describing, I think, what most listeners would say, well, that sounds like how everybody tries to learn how to read. Yeah. How does it get to the point, though, now that truly, like in my state of Ohio, and I think you said 25 other states, it's illegal to teach three queuing system. In other words, it's illegal to teach kids a system of how to learn to read. That's the way I interpret that.
Well, I just got an email today from a colleague who said in 25 states, children are being, our teachers are not allowed to ask kids, does this make sense to you? This thing you just read. And what I think is that the key to reading and speaking is making sense. That's what you always want kids to be able to do. This whole thing has gone way extreme and is real bizarre, you guys. Really, it's gone off the rails. And it's getting passed. Even in my state, there's a bill to pass this very thing. It's horrifying because Massachusetts is usually so good in education. But all the legislators are picking up on this and they're using the same words. If you look at all the legislation in all the states, they have the same, they say the three queuing system is debunked. It's not debunked. Mm. And phonics is the only way to teach. And that's not true. There's no research to show that only phonics helps kids read. There's no research. Even the reading panel in the year 2000 said phonics alone wouldn't do it. There's no research to show that. So it's like everybody, what's happening is like minds think. Everyone's saying the same thing, but it's not based in anything truthful.
This is the part too that's really challenging when we think about this and you say, you know, thank goodness for Dr. Nancy Carlson Page. What would Matt Damon's mom say about three queuing? Johnny Lupinacci, hopefully you've been brought up to speed a little bit on three queuing and recognizing that it's a system to help kids learn, learning itself, which is very messy. And so the ability to actually have a system, it's going to use this to help kids learn to read. It's a way to do it. Dr. Nancy Carlson Page, Matt Damon's mom, thank you so much for busting pencils with us tonight, Nancy.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Nancy Carlson Page.
Thank you. I hope I helped you. It's a complex issue. It's complex. So yeah. I'm trying to boil it down in some sensible way. Hopefully I helped. But okay.
And we're going to bring some crazy when we get back.
Thank you.
Damon on Busted Pencils Radio. Please stop bothering me. Seems every station on the TV
is selling something no one can be. Nah, that's not what we do. We always sell everything you can be. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated Educators Talking Education. The number is 855-752-4842. Dr. Nancy Carlson Page, Matt Damon's mom, to open up June, the first show in June, three queuing system, science of reading, Johnny Lupinacci. Did she teach you anything?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, the best thing for it is being a listener. And I know there's a lot of great listeners out there, you know, catching the show, especially on a Monday where we have Dr. Nancy Carlson Page. We get to ask Matt Damon's mom to explain stuff. And I love that she broke down, you know, the reading wars. We brought that up in a few of the shows. And for a listener out there, you know, Tim and I, we are a doctorate in education. So we've been in the classroom on this topic for some, you know, I won't even say how many years now, but the idea is since we were all in school, right? Mm-hmm. I can safely say that since we were all in school, there's been this debate. So just kind of breaking down the reading wars a little bit. There was this debate, and Tim, in a past show, you had brought up, like, since the readers are like Dick, Jane, and Spot, or whatever those early readers were, like, we being the people in education, were arguing over what's the best way to learn to read, like, or in a sense, what's the best way, the one right, correct way children to learn. And so there's, that's what the reading wars have been. Is it phonetic? You know, is it contextual? Like all the different ways. And sort of, and we had given some history around that, that that's been called in the industry, the reading wars, like which is the way, right? And education is a state right, right? And so state to state makes legislation, you know, has committees that that have jurisdiction over what the curriculum is for the state. And so, you know, reading wars have played out in our states to have legislators essentially take up, hey, this is the way to teach reading. We want all of our public schools to follow this, essentially follow this quote unquote best practice. And we hit an era in the 90s, I think it was, where we started to talk about balanced reading. And it was sort of like, hey, it's not phonics, it's not the words. You know, it's we got to learn. And good teachers, and I'll emphasize this, like Dr. Nancy Carlson Page is a great teacher, and she teaches so many good teachers. Good teachers have always known it's a combination of things. You know, we had a really great guest on. He's a radical writer, and we'll tease out his name because that's a little quiz. Callers, if you want to join us, 752-84842. You can give us a text or give us a call. You might remember that PT is his initials, but we'll come back to who that guy is. He's written about this. Hey, good teachers for a really long time have known that it's a combination of these things. So it was a little bit of like, I call it like as an educator, a breath of fresh air when we were in balanced reading, but like all the things, we are always learning more about how diverse children, right? Like learn differently. We're all diverse. Our brains work in different ways. There are some patterns and some trends, but it's not as simple as, well, this kid learns phonetically and this kid learns contextually and this kid, you know, is benefiting from sight words and we're just going to drill and kill him with sight words, you know, or context. There isn't one best way for all children. In fact, there's a toolbox that good teachers bring to the job of teaching reading. And within that toolbox, I love tonight that I learned what to call some of those tools. The three cueing system that Dr. Nancy Carlson Page taught us tonight, that she shares with her graduate students, you know, and Tim, maybe give a refresher for our listener. The three cueing system, you got, can you take us through it a little bit? I know I got it, but let's refresh a little bit because it's like 101. What are these tools that might be in the toolbox of a good teacher?
Well, so one is, right, and this goes back to phonics, letters and letters together. Letters make sounds, letters together make words. And so there is a way to learn to look at a word, decode it, deconstruct it based on the letters you see and the phonemic sounds that go with it. That's one part of it. You also learn as you're reading, though, there are certain words that you start to recognize, not necessarily because you can read the word, but because of the sentence that preceded that word has something to do with being able to predict what that word might be because it fits the context. And so you start to learn to anticipate words based on seeing what they look like and also knowing how they sound. And then does it make sense to fit in there? And bringing all of that together in, though, a message, and the message that comes through, and you start to say, any one of those, if that's helpful for somebody learning to read, whether it's a phonemic approach that you can break it down and that helps you, that's great. If you can look at and see the sense of the context that the word is being used in, if that makes sense, you use it. You use, and so when we're teaching kids to read, we want kids, and Johnny, I love the way you pointed this out, to say balanced literacy. It's like, how in the world did we outlaw balance? Because actually, balance now is the problem. And in fact, this is where the negativity of the three cueing system has come from, is that three cueing system was a part of what they called balanced literacy in the 90s. And the attack on balanced literacy in putting forth what is now called some form of the science of reading, but the big attack was on this three cueing system, because as Dr. Nancy Carlson Page, Matt's mom, said, well, somebody kind of equated it to teaching kids to just guess or hazard just sit words, and therefore that was teaching them how not to read. Yeah, John. Yeah,
Tim, you're breaking up a little bit. I think we're having internet's issue. But listener out there, wow, what a summary from Tim. I'm going to recap because I think this is really good learning. Three queuing system, because that was a term I'd heard, but I've been like, that's for the literacy teachers. Kind of like if, you know, I'm going to blue collar scholar this for a minute. You know, I'm a plumber. I bring my plumbing tools to the job. But there are certain tools that might cross over that a carpenter might also carry. But then they have job specific skills that they bring their toolbox to. So literacy, and especially elementary educators who are teaching literacy all the time, teaching children how to read, they know these tools. For me, I'm kind of on the other end, math teacher, secondary ed. I care about this, but I'm not as familiar with the tools. So I was learning tonight. So I'm going to recap real quick for our listener and for my understanding. Tim, you can check for understanding. That's another thing. We're using some teacher phrases here.
Check there you go.
For understanding. So one, we got the semantic. And what you were saying is one of the three queuing system is word meaning and sentence context. So I knew, like Dr. Nancy Carlson Page was saying, you know, I eat A and I see B and it's not, you know, I can kind of guess it's bun because I start to, you know, the word in context. So semantic is one. Two, syntactic. This word has always been, you know, interesting to me. Syntactic. This is grammatical. This is like it, where it's, where it is in the sentence and kind of like the whole sort of grammar placement of it. This is the one I've always struggled the most with because I'll tell you what, I couldn't for the longest time identify a preposition from an adjective, from a verb, that kind of thing. And then we had the graphophonic, the letter and sounds, the phonics. So those are the three. Tim, man, what a learning session for listeners. If you'd like to join the conversation, 752-4842, give us a call. Busted Pencils, we get you when we come back at the other half.
There it is, bouncing away, Monday night. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. And if you want to, too, it's 855-752-4842. Started off the show, Matt Damon's mom, Dr. Nancy Carlson Page, three queuing system. Johnny, kind of before this last break, really gave a nice fundamental understanding. But John, we've got an announcement that we want to put forth right now, right?
Yeah, there's a special thing happening at Civic Media. Listener out there, if you listen all day, you probably know a little bit about this, but if you're catching it right now, get on the train, because Civic Media's Sconny Summer Statewide Text to Win Contest is on now. Listen throughout the day for a chance to hear the next code to text in for a chance to win. New keywords announced in the 7, 9, 11, 1, 3, 5 and 7 p.m. hours. Actually, that's the 7 a.m., 9 a.m., 11 a.m., and then the 1, 3, 5, 7 p.m. Tune in and text for a chance to win. The prizes include Wisconsin Dells prize packs, Milwaukee Brewers club level tickets, plus the chance to win a Sconny Summer staycation. Chances to win every weekend from June 3rd to the 14th, beginning at 7 a.m. All right, get on it. Join the contest. Let's get on with it, though, Tim, because I got a question for you, man.
All right, man.
For listener out there, Tim and I, we get to talk all day long. We text each other back and forth. We're chopping it up. We're checking in with our associate producer, Jess, on the boards. But no, we were having a chat today about science of reading, and I love that Dr. Nancy Carlson Page came on, shared us some of the tools that literacy educators bring in their toolbox to teaching children to read, the three queuing system. I feel so much more knowledgeable about that. And I feel a little bit better about my understanding of the science wars or the reading wars. Now that I know there's this thing, science of reading, and I teased his name earlier, but Dr. Paul Thomas, he comes on the show and he talks about, hey, this science of reading thing actually isn't sound science. It's actually a marketing slogan to kind of say, hey, here's some stuff, and this is me being generous with this. Here's some stuff that we think might be more helpful, but you know what? We know that you know better, so we're going to try and legislate it to be required, which means you're going to have to buy our product. So it's a pretty sneaky and powerful marketing slogan to call it the science of reading. So we had Dr. Nancy Carlson Page on here today, you know, busting pencils with us and busting that myth that there is one best way to teach children to read. So kind of saying, hey, rather than just attacking science of reading, let's get into the facts. Let's get into that. And that was helpful. So now we all, listener, if you didn't catch it on the replay. You can download, you know, the podcast version of the show and listen to it then. So we're more empowered to understand there's this three cueing system, and we have this base to know that good teachers need to be able to bring all their tools to the job to teach children to read, not just a new set of tools that we don't even know if they do well on the job, right? So, Tim, I got a question for you, though, because we were talking about a recent conversation you had with the school leader. I think it was even the superintendent. And it kind of, I think it illuminates what this leads to. If a state legislation mandates science of reading, what kind of stuff does that leave our school leaders vulnerable to? So you want to share a little bit about that convo, my man?
Great conversation I had with, you say, school superintendent, school leader. In the state here, a mandate of the science of reading. And so now school leaders in the state of Ohio, not only the state of Ohio, but as you pointed out, Johnny, there now is a state-approved science of reading curricula that my buddy, who's the superintendent, now when they go to buy new classroom materials, they can only pick from the state-approved list. And there are a few there that you can pick from. So he went in, grabbed his, you know, early elementary teachers, some literacy specialists, formed a committee. And as a committee, they looked at the state list of approved curriculum and then made a decision, you know what, of all of the approved curriculum, we're going to go with this one here because it seems to be the best for us, the best our teachers can choose. We like the content. We like the materials. And he's like, you know, you would think, how could we go wrong? Well, Johnny, he found out that he went wrong, at least according to some of the people, because we're now also in talking about culture, you know, reading wars. We've got culture wars. And right now, anything woke, potentially woke, is a problem. And if you're approving anything that's woke, that could be a problem. You would think, though, if the state has already approved the curriculum, that they would have looked in it for potential wokiness. I'm going to use that term. Well, and you got, listener, you be the judge of this, but one of the stories that the kids would be reading in this approved curriculum is about the God of Thunder, Thor. And, you know, Thor, if you know Thor, sometimes Loki likes to mess with Thor in that. And in this little story, though, Thor kind of turns it back on Loki and disguises himself as a woman to trick Loki, the trickster. Thor's going to play a trick on Loki. And by dressing like a woman and disguising as a, well, as my superintendent friend found out, parents in the school district now have labeled this curriculum approved by the state as indoctrinating students towards and even wanting some form of a required drag literacy hour that is now going to be part of the school. My friend is just looking at Tim going, it's bad enough that we could only pick from certain approved curriculum because that already takes away the professional knowledge that me, my teachers, my committee, but we picked one that the state already approved. And still, according to the parents, when they saw it, well, Thor, God of Thunder, dressing like a woman, at least to these parents, saw this as ushering in a drag literacy story hour that would be coming with it. So this is the craziness, Johnny Lupinacci. That's the story, man.
Interesting, man. It kind of catches me off guard because I'm a little distracted by it because I'm like, man, now I'm remembering the story of Thor And I think for a listener out there, if you know it, come on, give us a call, join the conversation, 855-752-4842. But doesn't this also just fun? Let's play with it for a minute and then break it down. But Thor disguises himself as a goddess, right?
But there you go.
And then Loki has him do this as a bride. So like he kind of goes in and he does this to retrieve his hammer. If I'm remembering back
there
to
you
like,
know.
Yeah. Okay. So, wow. You know, Tim, so this could be not only part of like the science of reading, cause I'm trying to connect it back to that, you know, but where we're learning how to read and we're hearing stories, because part of learning to read is, you know, sharing oral traditions. And so this is one mythopoetic narrative that's part of, you know, school curriculum, as are in so many states, you know, really rich, diverse mythopoetic narratives shared, right? Oral traditions and stories, whether they're, you know, L.A. Tom calls in from time to time. He says, you know, when are we going to get back to teaching fairy tales and nursery rhymes? Right. There's some real good learning and lessons embedded in those. And I agree with them. Same thing with, we've talked about states that have legislatively, you know, implemented and required indigenous knowledge systems into the schools where there's really rich local stories that are part of our learning in place. Right. So this is important kind of not only to learn to read and analyze a story, but, you know, kind of brings it into this. And what a sad, not a sad moment, but I guess this is part of it. We have, as you said, not only reading wars getting played out, but I would say even more than reading wars, that's a culture war. Like you said, really, come on, people. Like, are we really that worried about, you know, the stories of Thor? And do we immediately go to how we would harm people in our community, right? Mm-hmm. We make an association and an absolute kind of jump to that this is going to mean that my way of identifying and understanding life has to be the only way. This is ridiculous to me. So I'm sorry that superintendent has to go through that. And any school leader out there probably is like, yep, welcome to another day being a school leader. There is always something. Right. But I love that. I love that you brought out that even with the legislative mandates on curriculum, like the good educators of Ohio are working with, that there is good stuff out there that great school leaders and great teachers can find and teach. So hopefully that school district's teaching about Thor and all the gods and goddesses and bringing in their local mythopoetic narratives and the awesome indigenous stories of the Ohio regions. Right. Mm-hmm. So hopefully they get to do that. But I don't know, man. Tim, I think we got a caller. Is it Cam from Appleton? We got Cam on the line.
Cam, what's happening, our friend?
Hey, I was like thinking how tame that sounds compared to I think I've mentioned it before, but I'm not expecting you guys to remember. But I graduated high school in 2014, and I remember our libraries and the schools that I attended were pretty decent size, I think. And, you know, some of the books that were available there that I'm sure to this day are probably still available there, I don't think these parents would agree with them, but they refuse to pick up a book anyways. I like Orson Scott Card books, Ender's Game with genocide in there, Xenocide, which was a sequel to it that had more genocide in it, Xanth by I think Piers Anthony, like, I mean, for lack of a better word, those books got dirtier and dirtier the farther you got into them, to the point that I ended up dropping them because it was just like, this isn't even about Xanth anymore. But my point is that those books are considered fantasy and sci-fi classics, and I guarantee you they fall under the same category, but these people are willing to cherry pick the dumbest things. They have nothing better to do.
Cam, it is one of those things, right, Johnny? You worry about going, go ahead, Johnny, jump in there. I see you.
Well, yeah, I mean, I love what Cam's bringing on here. And then we got a really awesome text here from Jason in Pennsylvania, who's sharing that there's a similar kind of corollary here. And thank you, Jameson, for bringing this up on the show. Thank you, Cam, for your call, because we're really talking about the importance, and it links back to the first hour where we were talking about, you know, reading and the importance of print text,
right?
And understanding our history through the stories and understanding our identity through both fact and fiction. but through the print text, right through literature. And one of the really important things, man, I was kind of thinking, oh, Tim, that's a sad day, but would they really ever do that? And then here we have Jameson from Pennsylvania sharing a gem of a comment, right? He said, this is insanity. I grew up in northeastern Pennsylvania. Part of our history is the Molly Maguires. I also got to learn about Molly Maguires, so I'm glad Jameson brought this up. But he said, a group of coal mining men who had enough of the unfair treatment and basically did some terrorism locally against the mine owners and bosses. They dressed as women to hide their identity. They were all hanged for their crimes. In fact, he shared, Sean Connery was in a movie based off this. It's not about being trans. It's about hiding identity for other means. Sigh. Jameson also followed up to say, per the Molly Maguires, it's been eliminated from the local history being taught for the same reason Tim brought up, sort of this transphobia. He said, for trans reasons. And right. So, you know, I was thinking like, oh man, Tim, maybe you're being a little hyperbolic about this. Do people really jump to, you know, this is an issue about trans, this is transphobia. Here I am, I'm corrected. To assume that there are not that many transphobic people around us, but apparently we're wiping things from history based on that leap, right? Mm-hmm. When there's a bigger kind of thing here. So Jameson, thanks for your text. You know what, Tim, I think there's more to unpack here. I think there's a lot more to unpack here. But let's get to it when we come back from the break. Give us a call, 855-752-4842, Busted Pencils, when we come back.
I tell you what, that sounds like Thor music right there. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Thor, stop losing your hammer, dude, and you wouldn't have to dress like a woman to get it back from Loki. And then
also, nothing wrong with dressing like a woman.
No, there's not. It's just like,
Just going to back you up there a little bit, Tim.
Well, you know, in that, and yeah, you're right. I mean, the whole thing, and then the Molly Maguires, Jameson, thank you, too, for really pointing that out. Again, just the subtleties made me think about going, boy, we should do a show of the things that we remember being taught and how powerful they were, and then putting them under today's potential woke standards or the woke police. And finding out how much of what was powerful learning for us could now be considered woke, and largely by taking either something way out of context or something, again, to just try to illustrate and bring home a point. Because, you know, I will say this, though. Our friend Ethan Siegel really points out, Dr. Ethan Siegel, that, you know what, public schools, it's not about choice. And in fact, if you're going to a public school, you are going to be part of the curriculum. And guess what? If you don't like that curriculum, well, in a lot of states right now that have universal vouchers, I was thinking that Ethan would probably tell these parents, hey, look, you don't have any complaints here because you have a voucher available to you. Leave the public school and go ask for what you want to be taught in a private school, because in public schools, we still learn about Thor, we still learn about Loki. And the reality of if somebody's going to make a connection to seeing this as a trans issue, then we're going to use this moment as a trans issue too, and also use this to elevate and talk about our trans community and making sure how that we are absolutely not in a position of creating, as Johnny, as you say, causing harm to our neighbors. And so here's the opportunity here.
Well, yeah, Tim, and I want to riff off that a little bit and just say, like, also, you know what, we're going to, like, when you say the choice to be in a public school or to exercise your right you know, to not participate in that public school system, but children should be in a school. And so you can select to traditionally the private schools, but good luck finding a private school that is also not going to teach something as traditional. And to be honest with you, Tim, kind of like heteronormative, you know, sure, curriculum is Thor. So I want to also back up and say, what a wonderful opportunity for us as educators, especially as school leaders, to say, you know what? We don't have to hide this. It's 2024. It is also Pride Month, my man.
There you go. Thank you, Johnny Lupinacci.
We as public educators do not have to hide this. And in fact, we don't need the story of Thor to be trans-affirming. We don't need to hide it into anything. We are here learning about healthy development, and that looks different and that feels different for different folks. And you know what? If you're folks in our community, you matter. You matter. Right. We care about you. And so what a wonderful opportunity to just say schools lead and they lead by example. So instead of being pulled into that, this is going to be, you know, something that's potentially transphobic or trans, let's back out and just unapologetically say, well, guess what? We're trans affirming in this community and in these schools. So this doesn't even matter. You got bigger fish to fry. You probably need a different school or a different school district, because it's not just going to be hidden into the story about Thor, you know, getting his hammer back. Hey, speaking of getting hammers back and getting hammered, you can get a great brew in Madison at Monaco Brewing Company. Busted Pencils is sponsored by the Monaco Brewing Company, who sued the state of Wisconsin to end its parasitic voucher system that hurts public schools. Monaco Brewing Company is making Wisconsin great again, one beer at a time. Check out monacobrewingcompany.com to see where you can buy their progressive beer, where you can have conversations like Tim, you and I are having tonight, and that Jess is getting to listen to. Jess, we didn't have you much on the show tonight. How you doing back there?
I'm doing good. It's been fun to learn.
There's a lot of learning today. I mean, the fact that you go from the reading wars to the three queuing system to culture wars to recognizing too the literacy choices, realizing how what something you say is like, is this trans affirming, trans, you know, trans discriminating again? And yeah, you know, Jim from Appleton is no.
All right. So the other thing, just a clarification, Tim, you know, we talked about a contest that's going for folks interested in participating in that context. You got to listen at the beginning of those hours. Right. So at the beginning of the next hour, there'll be a code. You get that code, let it rip, and you too can win a contest.
There it is. Johnny, you know, again, first day of the month, Dr. Nancy Carlson Page.
She opens up
the show with just such a, you know, people are like, is that really? Yeah, that really is Matt Damon's mom. And guess what? Before Matt was like a really big superstar, and Dr. Nancy Carlson Page was a teacher. And then a professor, and she has always been there. And yeah, we got time. We got to go quick one. We got Jim from Jim right now, giving us a call. Jim from Appleton. Jim, what's happening?
Hi, I'm just wondering if they pulled all the Shakespearean plays and all the classical Greek plays, because at the time they produced those and put those all on, there were no female actors. There were female parts, but all the actors were male, therefore they were all dressed in drag.
I know, Jim, right? It's kind of like you almost get pulled into going, is this drag? No. And again, because if we were using it from that standpoint, Johnny, the way you put it out there, Thor being such a heteronormative type of, you know, place, yeah, the whole idea is, you know, how much more in one way, you know, affirming towards hetero orthodoxy is Thor. I mean, he is, you know, the man. Anyway, Jim, thank you so much for the call. Yeah, pointing this out, it gets crazy. You know what though, Johnny, that's what we try to do here though, you know, every night of the week, Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk, is recognize that what's happening in public schools, what's happening with learning, all of the things that are going on in your schools, whether it's the reading wars or whether it's the culture wars, there are ways to look at these ways that bring us together, and how we as communities realize and understand that the strength of our communities is in the strengths of our public schools, and realizing that how we need to be committed to their continuation and, in fact, strengthening our public schools. And you know what? And having diverse literatures, diverse reading, to really dig deep to understand the human experience. That's what we want. That's what public schools do. They bring us home, and guess what? They're the bedrock foundation of democracy. Johnny, great guest tomorrow. I'm just going to hint, publicization is the new word we're going to be learning.